Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we
found. Oh, yeah. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, not the Talking Head David Burns, who wrote the lyrics to that song, except for the one word, Solartopia, which I wrote. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We're here at the Progressive Radio Network with the Green Power and Wellness Show. This coming to you from Solartopia. I happen to be in Los Angeles with the wonderful Jean Sue, who's in Washington, D.C. How you doing, Jean?
All right. Not as sunny as California.
Oh, yeah. Well, your smile's pretty sunny. this is the first PRN show, the first Green Power Solartopia and Wellness show that I'm doing on Zoom. Because last week, telephones were all over the map, and I love Zoom. I get to see who I'm talking to. And we got Joel Siegel talking to us from Charlotte, North Carolina. How you doing, Joel?
Life is very, very beautiful. I'm glad that you've got Jean Sue on today. I think she's outstanding activist for the earth and for the people. So she's that new generation of leaders that we have to lift up.
Absolutely. And we got Mark Carlin. Mark, you with us?
Yes, I am, Harvey.
So, Mark, you're in Charlotte. You're in Chicago. So we got East Coast, South, Midwest, and California. Now I hear some yapping in the background. Does somebody have a radio on or something? No. Okay. So listen, here's our show today. We got the full hour for the Green Power.
It sounds like E.T. Go home.
It does. Yeah. Maybe you guys in the studio can get rid of it. I don't know. But we're going to start, as we did a couple weeks ago, with Mark Carlin. Mark is the editor and publisher of BuzzFlash. I do hear something in the background, but anyway, BuzzFlash, and one of our great websites here, and he does a 15-minute commentary with us every other week. Mark, we're glad to have you, and then we're going to go to... We go to Jean, and she's going to talk to us for 15 minutes or so about her great work. And then Joel and I are going to talk about the national election protection call that we do every Monday, which is becoming a center for the election protection movement, which certainly we need with this lunatic in the White House. And Joel has founded a COVID-19 emergency response group, a national coalition. We're going to invite you, our listeners, to join us on these calls. There'll be one tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern time. Is that right, Joel? And then on Monday, 5 o'clock Eastern time, to talk about election protection. And we'll talk about that when we get beyond Mark's commentary, and then our interview with Jean. So, Mark, I know you got a few really lovely compliments today for the leadership of the Trump team here. I did just read an article. Jared Kushner, you know, these guys, you couldn't make these guys up. Somebody asked Jared Kushner if there was a plan to cancel the election in November. And he said, well, not yet, not currently. So we haven't come up with a plan yet to cancel the election. You know, God, these people. Jared Kushner, for those of you who are of the tribe, is what we call a Shonda for the Goyim. It's the only Joel, I won't explain what a Shonda for the Goyim is. It's not obscene, but... I see all you guys are laughing. God, Zoom is wonderful. I hope we can make this Zoom public for my whole listenership. Okay. Gene seems to be laughing. Gene, do you want to tell us something about your heritage here? Are you actually Jewish?
I am married to a Jewish man, so.
Oh, all right.
Some terminology here.
Okay. I don't know. Jewish guys always get the most beautiful women. What can I tell you? Is that sexist? I don't know. Okay, Mark Carlin, please. I know you've got some great commentary for us. Your BuzzFlash website is kind enough to publish my articles. We have one up there now about voting and election protection at BuzzFlash. But you're going to talk about, well, go ahead. You can tell us what you're going to talk about.
I think it's a great segue, Harvey, because your commentary was excellent about absentee voting. And of course, the Republicans are both on the state level and federal level opposing mail-in voting. What I see happening right now is one of their strategies to accomplish not having mail-in voting, which includes, by the way, the basically destruction of the Postal Service. The former commissioner of the Postal Service resigned a few days ago, and a Trump appointee is being put in. But anyway, the issue I see is that the Republicans have weaponized death. Obviously, we have Trump weaponizing it on the presidential level. I get annoyed when I read the New York Times or some publications saying he's bungling COVID-19. He's not bungling it. He's absolutely obstructing any possible solution. And I think that in coordination with this, the party is basically, as I said, weaponizing death to try to ensure their victory. And I visually, you can't see this, but this is just one example, because I think it brings into play the larger picture of what happened in Wisconsin, where the Republicans down the line to the court system, the Republican legislature in Wisconsin, basically made a situation where voters had to choose between voting or running the risk of being infected and perhaps dying from COVID-19. So this was an article on CNN yesterday. The headline is Texas Attorney General asks court to stop counties from issuing mail-in ballots to voters afraid of the coronavirus. And the first paragraph is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton on Wednesday asked the state Supreme Court to step in and stop county election officials from letting voters afraid of catching coronavirus to vote by mail. So they are doing what was done in Wisconsin. The Republicans are saying you're going to have to risk possibly becoming infected if you want to vote. This does not qualify the Republican Attorney General, says of Texas, for an absentee ballot. Now, I think what's the larger picture here is that we're seeing a massive assault on voting rights amidst the pandemic, but using the pandemic. Obviously, if we had vote by mail, we wouldn't be in the situation where people won't be able to choose, that in some states like Texas, it will not be considered a valid concern that one doesn't want to potentially die by voting. We know that after Wisconsin, the last figure I saw was that 60 people were affected from voting in that primary. They chose to exercise their right to vote. Now, the Republicans are basically embracing death. If you read into some of the articles about why Mitch McConnell doesn't want to bail out the blue states, one of them is the blue states are basically Democratic voters. Coronavirus has disproportionately hit people of color. And so senators went on record, I believe it was in roll call, basically saying, why would we want to bail them out? The Democratic constituency is dying off because of coronavirus. This also, this cult of death extends to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if we move away from the voting a bit, because there was another article in roll call which quoted senators saying that if she died, they would appoint, nominate, and confirm a Trump judge, even though McConnell, as we infamously know, wouldn't allow Merrick Garland to be nominated, wouldn't even hold a Judiciary Committee hearing on him, and wouldn't allow him to meet with any of the Republican senators. So they are doing a death watch on Ruth Bader Ginsburg and gloating about it, saying that they'll probably be able to, she'll die before the election, and they'll be able to confirm another right-wing Federalist judge. So I think the Republicans just basically fully embrace this cult of death, because it will give them, and they feel, an advantage at the polls. And one more thing I'll say is that just yesterday, it's on BuzzFlash today, as is the story about Texas, the Supreme Court in the state of Wisconsin, which is still 5-4, sort of right-wing Republican, it was about to become 6-3, but the liberal judge won in an enormous surprise in that deathly election. But the Supreme Court yesterday, 5-4, said that the Republican legislature had sued to have the Supreme Court rule that the shelter at home order of the governor of Wisconsin, who's a Democrat, was invalid, and the Supreme Court agreed with these Republicans. So once again, they're going to be spreading coronavirus and upping the infection and death toll. And this has simply become, they have no empathy for the people dying and suffering. It's simply become a tool for them. Death has become a tool for them to maintain political power. Okay. And they're using it in many different ways.
Well, Mark Carlin, editor-publisher of BuzzFlash, a truly great website, and everybody should go to buzzflash.com. Your labeling the Republicans a cult of death is, I think, exactly where we're at here. I mean, the Nazis were a cult of death. And I don't see, people ask me, what do I think of, in a hostile way, what I think of Trump? And I said, well, what do you think of Hitler? And I think that you're labeling them a cult of death is really important, and it's right on the money. I will never forgive Barack Obama, by the way, for not using a recess appointment to put Merrick Garland on the court. He could have done it, and he should have done it, and forced them to pull him off. But nonetheless, you're right. There is a death watch for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm sure all these lovely so-called Christians go to bed every night praying that she dies. And this, and you're exactly right about weaponizing the pandemic. There's no doubt that they're doing that. And we have to understand, and I'll talk with Joel later about this because of our focus on election protection in our Monday 5 p.m. call, is that the plan, which Kushner sort of waffled about, is not to cancel the election outright. It's to kill the Postal Service and make vote by mail impossible. I mean, that's what they want to do.
There's one other key point that has been brought up. Tom Hartman brought it up, and I saw it brought up in another commentary the other day, which is there is a provision in the Constitution that allows state legislatures to basically preempt a popular vote and give the electoral vote to the loser. In some ways, this is what Florida did in 2000. They voted, it was a Republican legislature with a Republican governor, Jeb Bush, and they voted to appoint the Bush electors. Now, that never had to be resolved because of the infamous 5-4 Supreme Court ruling, but it did set a precedent. It's also what allowed then Secretary of State to proclaim that Bush had won the state.
Right, and then of course the Supreme Court jumped in 5-4 in the infamous Bush v. Gore decision and handed the presidency to George W. Bush. But again, Al Gore never said anything, has not said anything in the last 20 years about this. He went off and, you know, got his Nobel Prize for popularizing knowledge of global warming, but he has yet to say a word about the theft of the 2000 election. And, if Al Gore was ever going to come forward with anything, it's time that he started fighting about this, as should John Kerry, who legitimately won Ohio in 2004, and as should Hillary Clinton, who legitimately won Wisconsin, Michigan and North Carolina. North Carolina, we think, but certainly Pennsylvania in 2016. So these corporate Democrats have allowed this to happen and not challenged it. Al Gore has yet to say the first word. I think he should apologize to Ralph Nader and fess up to the fact that he allowed the election to be stolen in 2000. And I want to slip this in here. Al, and very few people deal with this. Nobody deals with it, actually. Al Gore was vice president of the United States when the electors came in in 2000. And the Black Caucus, and Joel was certainly familiar with the Black Caucus in Congress, challenged the legitimacy of the Florida Electoral College delegation. And there is a provision in the Constitution, if you get one senator and one congressperson to come forward, there has to be a hearing on the legitimacy of the Electoral College delegation. And Al Gore strong-armed the Senate and refused to allow this hearing. It's one of the worst things that a vice president has ever done. I put it at number two. Number one was in 1865, Andrew Johnson showed up at Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural, where he gave one of the greatest speeches in the history of the world. Andrew Johnson from Tennessee, the vice president-elect, showed up drunk. And here's Abe Lincoln giving one of the greatest speeches in the history of the human race, and his vice president is drunk. There you go. So at any rate, Mark, go ahead.
I wonder how they recorded that.
Nobody reported it. People were really angry about it. And then he became the worst vice president. He became the worst person ever, along with Lyndon Johnson, because of Vietnam. To be Andrew Johnson completely sabotaged Reconstruction. I mean, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing, and then we've got, you know, great guests besides, you know, my perspective. But one of the problems I think many, at least centrist Democrats, have is they follow, and I love Michelle Obama, she's great, but when she said they go low, we go higher, you know, that just doesn't work when you're dealing with thugs, robbers, grifters, and people are embracing death as an electoral strategy. Going higher is just not going to work. You got to bring out the brass knuckles. And I think that a key thing happened in, and I'll finish with this, in the 2000 election, and we were covering it, in Buzz Flash is 20 years old this month. A key thing that happened was this Brooks Brothers riot in Miami-Dade County that Roger Stone was involved with and Tom DeLay. And they stopped the counting in Miami-Dade County. The counters were so frightened of the raucous crowd and the threats, they stopped. And it was from that point on that the Bush campaign gained control of the narrative. And the narrative went from Gore won, and the recount will show it, to Gore is trying to steal the election from George W. Bush. And the Democrats are very bad at that. Trump controls, in general, the media narrative. The Democrats are very bad on messaging and on having a strong spot.
You're 100% right, Mark, and thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. I will add that the Democrats are pretty corporate Democrats, are pretty bad on content, too. And then, you know, Nancy Pelosi has just put forward this $3 trillion bailout, and it's another corporate bailout. I mean, it's not going to help working people. I mean, they just abolish student debt and establish Medicare for all and abolish medical debt. That's all they got to do. But these conservative Democrats, these corporate Democrats are really the cause of the problem here. You know, my next column is going to be, where are Franklin and Eleanor now that we need them? I mean, you know, come on, you know, Joe Biden, you know, riding with Biden, give me a break. He's a total embarrassment. And one of the reasons that Trump's, you know, I was looking at the polls. Trump has the majority of people don't approve of him. And the majority of people think he's doing a bad job. But there's still more than 40% of the country thinks he's doing a good job. 40%, for God's sakes. And one of the reasons is there's no alternative. I mean, you know, he gets up there every day. If Franklin Roosevelt was around, you know, all the attention would be on him, as it would be on Elizabeth Warren, by the way. But, you know, we got this, you know, my line now is that the two candidates, the United States of America has come this far, all this great history, and in 2020, our two candidates for president are dirty old men with dementia. Two dirty old men with dementia running for president. So, Mark Carlin, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Mark.
We know you got to go. Keep up at Buzz Flash. Thanks for running my stuff. I really appreciate it. Okay, buddy?
Great.
You're welcome to stay on. Welcome to stay on if you like, but we are going to turn to Jean Hsu, the first woman I've ever met of Oriental origin who speaks Yiddish. So,
your species, an endangered one.
I'm very proud to. Although I think there's an Oriental woman comedian who throws Yiddish into her act. I don't know, but you know, it's great to have you on, Mark. Again, thank you for being with us. You're welcome to stay and pipe up if you like, but keep up at Buzz Flash. We really appreciate it. And I got to say, I love being able to see you guys. Okay, Mark, good to have you. And like I say, you're welcome to stay. So, Jean Hsu, tell us about your organization. I know you're working against the Trump wall, but you're also working on climate change and a lot of stuff. Very incredibly impressive resume, Jean Hsu. So tell us about what you're doing and what's at the top of your agenda.
Okay, so I work for an organization called the Center for Biological Diversity. So hopefully folks who are listening have heard of us. We've been around for 30 years and still are at the forefront of endangered species protection. But our work is also about climate change, about fighting fossil fuel companies with litigation, And now my team is on the energy justice side, and we're working to deploy as much distributed solar power as possible and basically get the transformation that we need to beat the climate emergency with distributed solar.
So distributed solar primarily is rooftop. And rooftop
and community solar.
Community solar.
Yeah, so non-utility solar. And I think so much kind of emphasis has always been on utility scale stuff. And one of the important things to note in our vision of the future is that, you know, we can't just suddenly keep with centralized utilities and just switch from a fracked gas plant to a solar plant. We actually have to go beyond that and actually challenge the governance systems that have gotten us here in the first place. So the families who have fossil fuel plants built in their backyard, who never had a choice in what type of energy should be coming from a centralized fossil fuel corporation, should have the opportunity now in a new future to choose distributed solar, community solar, rooftop solar, the types of clean energy that they can A, vote for in a democratic system, B, have governance choices over, and C, get that local job generation back to their communities. And that ultimately is not only what's going to save us in terms of carbon emissions, but it's what's going to save our fucking democracy. And it's those types of like decentralized systems from the bottom up that we want. We don't want to be still relying on a centralized, dirty utility paradigm going forward.
So, you know, I mentioned to you in the run-up to the show that Michael Moore's movie, which has gotten 6 million views, but in the long run, I don't think it's going to hurt us. It's sad because Michael Moore has been a national treasure, and this really sullies his reputation because there's so much stuff in it that's inaccurate. And so, I mean, just flat out inaccurate, not opinion, not just opinion inaccurate, just flat out wrong. And they did a whole shtick on attacking solar, just completely wrong stuff. And they completely omitted exactly what you're talking about, which is distributed solar. Now, to me, and you know, I've been involved, I was on a hippie farm in 1973, and they came into town and wanted to build a nuclear power plant. And you know, we were anti-war activists and civil rights activists. And I had actually, this is one of those, there's a Yiddish term called beshert, which means it's fate, right? So when I was bar mitzvahed in 1959, I got from the Schachters across the street, my gift from them was a Walt Disney book called Our Friend the Atom. And so I read Our Friend the Atom when I was 13, and I did a report in junior high on nuclear power, which I cribbed from this book. And so from the time I was 13, I knew how a nuclear power plant worked.
Yeah.
If you'd asked me between 1959 and 1973 about nuclear power, I'd have told you it was the greatest thing that ever happened. But then when they came into the town, it was the war and all this stuff, and we just said, to hell with you. So we were asked at the time, if you don't have nuclear, what are you going to have? And we said, we had no idea. We said, oh, solar energy, that'll work. You know, and what I have seen in the last almost 50 years of the almost miraculous rise of solar technologies. And the key and the most radical is exactly what you're working on, which is distributed. Because distributed means that it's controlled by the community. So what do you do for distributed solar energy?
So one of the questions is, why is distributed energy less than 1% of our energy generation right now? What has happened since Jimmy Carter put that on the White House and we tried to achieve energy independence? And one of the answers to that is that our corporate utility system of energy has actually actively blocked and obstructed distributed solar. So the things that we are working on are trying to legally challenge those obstructions. So for instance, you know, the reason why they are obstructing this is because it threatens their entire business model. We have corporate utilities, and you know, this is an electricity system history lesson, which I always find fascinating. The government, you know, it was too expensive for the government to provide electricity. And this is back in the early or mid 1800s, essentially, early to And so they needed capital, which they didn't have, and somebody else to build it for them. So they made these monopolies that we have today, still these monopoly contracts, where they said, we can't afford this, but what we can do is give you, as a corporation, the ability to have a monopoly of territory and to basically supply electricity, but you have to ensure that those rates are at a point that is still reasonable and affordable. And at the end of the day, you need to act in the public interest. What's happened, you know, so when that happened in the early 1800s, it actually democratized electricity. So, you know, previously to that, you had private companies just supplying the wealthy, but those types of monopoly contracts actually helped spread electricity to everybody, which was fabulous. Not the rural communities, and that's a different story. But fast forward 100, 200 years later, and we have the system that we have now, which is corporate utilities, some of the largest corporations in this country, using fracked gas and coal to supply our energy, raising rates every year because the only way they can make money is to keep building infrastructure. So they need these coal plants and fracked gas plants. And basically the question is, are you working in our public interest if you are intentionally exacerbating the climate crisis? And the answer is no, they are not. But what has happened in the last 110 years is that they have captured our states and our regulators. So states and regulators still depend on these corporations. Meanwhile, people whose fracked gas plants are in their backyard don't have the ability to do anything. And there are so many obstructive policies that are being put out there to stop them from getting rooftop solar. Some of them are purely in most of the states in the South. Totally, you are totally prohibited from actually creating community solar. Right now, literally 2 weeks ago, a shadow group just submitted to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, a petition that will basically completely exterminate net metering policies across this country. I don't know if people know about this huge news, but like net metering has been the one sole policy that has driven distributed solar. We now have a group who's taken this to the federal government and have asked them to totally exterminate it. So these are the attacks that are happening on energy. And so when you think about our democracy and clean energy and our climate crisis, we are up against corporations and corporate politicians and everyone who are actively not acting in the public interest for us. They are raising our rates and cutting off our electricity to keep pumping out fossil fuels and fracking our land and poisoning our water. So these are the issues that we're dealing with. And, you know, the fight for democracy is the same fight for energy independence and for energy freedom, for clean energy freedom.
You have, I want to talk more about that in a minute, but you have a push in the Congress for a moratorium on utility cutoffs. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So one of the things that we knew coming into the crisis automatically was that families were really scared that their power and their water and their broadband would be cut off because we are facing an unprecedented economic situation of unemployment. And the people who are employed are the frontline workers and people of color who are disproportionately dying from this crisis because they are shouldering the entire burden of this country as it moves forward. So we automatically mobilized with our partners. It turns out that only 40% of states actually have protections against shutoffs for water. So that means water is life. Water is also the number one defense against this COVID crisis. And water utilities are, unfortunately, are not in a great economic situation. So they have had to cut off water. You know, the Navajo Nation is suffering from no water. And so, you know, we need a push for a moratorium on stopping the shutoffs of these basic human rights of water, power, and broadband. We all know how important electricity is. And as the heat gets harder and it gets warmer from the climate crisis, families are dying every year from the climate crisis because of heat strokes. The fact that, you know, they will not have electricity during this COVID crisis is fatal to them, especially because of what's going on with the climate crisis. And finally, broadband, the reason why that's so important is because it's not a luxury item. It is actually the way that people are being schooled right now. Children have schooling opportunities. So by cutting off broadband from already disproportionately disadvantaged folks means that you are setting a generation back of Black, Brown, Indigenous, and other communities of color. So that's why we absolutely need a moratorium on these shutoffs. And I know that we just talked about, you know, Mark and you were just talking about the, like, you know, Speaker Pelosi and everybody in the House. What has been amazing is that we mobilized, and we mobilized around 830 organizations across the spectrum. So we're talking about, you know, not only clean energy folks and environmental justice folks and consumer rights folks, but human rights, civil rights, democracy groups, all of these folks came together to mobilize for this moratorium on a shutoff. And we actually got it into the House bill. So the House bill that just came out yesterday has this. It is amazing. And we have to thank Speaker Pelosi for this and other Democrats who have actually fought for providing basic human rights still during this era. And we'll see whether, you know, how we're going to get Senator McConnell on board with us. But, you know, I think, Mark, what you were saying is really critical. The fact that you can, the fact that Mitch McConnell can vote against this is why is supplying and providing basic human rights a partisan issue in this country? And that is the crisis that we're talking about. And Mark, you are right in saying that if they view this as partisan and they will shut off power, water, and broadband from people, they are killing people. And that is just on the drumbeat of the death cult that you were talking about.
Question.
Congratulations on getting that in with Nancy Pelosi, and I'm glad it's a part of the bill. Mark, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. I mean, I'm inundated every day in, you know, the Trump sociopathic world of madness and McConnell's corporate partisanship. How there was a New York Times article, it's up on BuzzFlesh today, that at least for the moment, renewable energy is either eclipsing or close to eclipsing coal.
It's over. Given it's over. We now get more. We get more energy from renewables now than we do from coal.
But given the Trump's obsession with, you know, propping up and bringing back subsidies to coal and to big oil, Gene, how are we, you know, how do you think it's going to play out in terms of maintaining that edge that renewable now has?
Yeah, so, you know, economically right now, solar and wind are cheaper than coal. And in some places, they are definitely cheaper than fracked gas as well. So I think we have an incredible economic card to play. What's going to happen right now in this interim is that utilities like Duke Energy, which is, you know, Joel's provider, are starting to go on the offense. So we are on the offense on the federal legislative side. They are on the defense. Right now, they are going on the offense on a state level to start these rate-making cases where they're about to say, you know, people, we need to actually hike up everybody's rates again because, you know, you weren't able to pay for your bill. So we need to hike up your rates to keep these coal plants going. One of the things I think that will become very apparent, and I hope that utility commissions see this across the country, is that it is totally inappropriate at this time in emergency when people are so slammed economically to even envision some type of rate hike for an emergency that they suffered the most from and not corporations. One of the things that will have to be asked is it appropriate that people are paying for this? Or is it appropriate that the corporation and the investors are sucking this up? These corporations are still basing their rates off of a 10% return on investment for investors when the stock market has dropped below zero. So these are the questions that we have to ask. So one, where does that money come from? Potentially investors themselves. Two, does it actually, it's actually really expensive for you to run that coal plant, to gas plant. So does it actually make sense that you're still financing that? Why don't we pull that money out and actually get cheaper, cleaner energy from solar and wind? And so I think these are the things that we as a community have to fight back on. And it actually makes economic sense. Like, holy smokes, right? This actually makes more economic sense. And I think that's the thing that we have to pivot on. And I hope, you know, as Republicans, they, you know, people can see that if economically it makes sense and plus it's good for people, I hope that they can jump on board with that.
Joel Siegel, you haven't said anything yet. Do you want to pipe in on this?
Yeah, I love listening to Jean. She's like the Tupac Shakur, Biggie Smalls of activism. And I could literally listen to her all day. She's phenomenal. So no, I was enjoying listening to both Mark and Jean. Yeah, I mean, so I work with Michael Mann and Mark Jacobson. And what every scientist, actually there's several hundreds of them, if not thousands, have said we have 10 years to transition to 100% clean renewable energy. That's it. So if you look at the Greenland ice sheet, if you look at Antarctica, they're melting. That's why we're having these so-called polar vortexes, where the weather was like 38 degrees here in Charlotte in May. Usually we drink our mint juleps, you know, on the pulch, where it's, you know, 78 degree weather. But what Gene was saying is, in terms of having the world on edge because of corporate profits and stockholder-driven energy, no, we cannot accept this kind of immoral system. It's going to destroy our planet. So go to 100% clean renewable energy, 80% probably in the next 10 years, 100% by 2045, actually as soon as possible. We have the technology. It's cost effective. I've been in battles with Duke Energy here in Charlotte. I've been meeting them with our former mayor and city council members and state legislators and fake leaders. And what I've been telling them is, number one, if you take the fossil fuel subsidies of oil, gas, and coal and use that to pay for the upfront cost of solar and wind, then, you know, they're going to make their money. Their shareholders are going to make their money. We have a win-win. Now, some on the left might say, well, that's unrealistic. That's immoral. That's true. But my whole career I've spent mostly in Congress, where I had to deal with the powers that be. So if we can save the planet, provide electricity that's clean, renewable, and affordable, I think that's what we're going to have to do. And in that vein, I've been working with Mark Jacobson and 1520 scientists and leaders on a 100% clean renewable energy transitions bill with teeth in it. You know, a ban on all fossil fuel infrastructure, a ban on the use of the gas, so forth and so on, and then clean jobs. I think we have to have a bill in Congress introduced as soon as possible that does that.
Dean? Well, let me tell you a story then. Let me jump in here, okay? I'm gonna do this as quick as I can. So I live most of my life in Ohio. And Northern Ohio, and so you're talking about proactive government regulation and subsidies and so on to help renewable energy. But we're in a position now where it's all coming the other way. And the corporations are actively assaulting the renewable energy industry because they know that technologically and economically, renewables have jumped way ahead of fossil and nuclear power. So here's what happened in Northern Ohio. And this is huge. And this is explains everything that's going on in this country. Northern Ohio, along the north coast, about 20-30 mile corridor down from the lake, is perfect wind power country. It's flat. The farmers are desperate for windmills. The winds are steady. They're not as powerful as they are offshore or in the Great Plains, but they're good enough. And there's transmission lines already there, which is a huge deal. You can install wind and not install new right-of-way. You don't have to do that, which is, I'm sure you know, is a key to wind power. And the wind sites are close to the cities. You know, Detroit, Akron, Toledo, Cleveland, Ashtabula, up around Erie, Buffalo. They all can get wind along the north coast, right? So the legislature, and it could all be done free market. This is the thing. You don't need any legislation.
Yeah.
So the Ohio legislature, which is completely in the pocket since 2010 and the great gerrymander of the fascist right, set up a single sentence in the Ohio code that says, in order to build a windmill, you have to have 1,500 feet away from the nearest structure, which is insane. You know, it's a quarter mile. It's ridiculous.
Harvey.
Completely gratuitous. and it has prevented $4 billion. That's B, $4 billion worth of wind development in Northern Ohio, which would have made the state totally energy self-sufficient with renewable energy.
Harvey.
And it gets worse, but go ahead, Joel.
I want to do a one-upsmanship. The state legislature of North Carolina did a moratorium on wind energy.
Right.
Now, what kind of sense does that make? Because first of all, wind energy offshore could power all of the electricity in North Carolina.
North America.
Right. Because the water's very shallow. In the Pacific Ocean, it used to be very difficult to do, you know, full-scale wind power, but not anymore because they've made wind power turbines that can actually float, right? So this is why we're going to have a people's movement like we have never seen before. If we're going to go to 100% clean renewable energy, you can't have – the reason why I love working with the Center for Biological Diversity and Gene got over 800 organizations to sign the letter to the Congress calling for a moratorium on utility shutoffs. Now, that's the old school that you and Harvey and I and Mark come from, coalition building, no ego, just do the job for the people. And that's why, okay, am I being effusive today about Gene? Yes, I am. But you know what, at age 60, I feel really good that Gene is one of the leaders in this movement because, you know what, I feel pretty much more secure. But right. We're going to have that united front, and we're going to have to do it fast. We're going to have to hire at least 20 full-time organizers.
Well, I think we should do, Gene, since you've got 800 organizations, we should have a national Zoom call on these energy issues. Okay,
yeah, absolutely.
So why don't we talk off camera about that? And I want to finish the Ohio story because you're not going to believe what happened in Ohio.
Keep going. The assault.
So there are two nuclear plants on the North Coast. Perry, which is 35 miles east of Cleveland, and Davis-Bessie, which is the world's most notoriously horrible nuclear plant. It's famous worldwide. I won't go into the detail, but it's held together with chewing gum, this nuclear plant. And it should have shut in. It should never have been built, but, you know, and they're losing money. So they claim they're losing money. You're going to love this. So they go to the legislature. And these are all the free market Republicans, right? And they get a $1 billion bailout from the legislature to keep Perry and Davis-Bessie operating. So then we come back, the grassroots comes back, and also we did get some coal and gas money, and we have a petition to, actually they did it, the fossil guys did it. They circulate a petition to override the bailout by the legislature, which is perfectly legitimate, and the nuclear industry hired thugs and physically assaulted people who were circulating petitions to have a referendum to overturn this bailout. Because everybody knew the referendum would pass 4-1. And they physically, this is fascism. This is pure Nazi thuggery, brown shirts out there intimidating witness signature gatherers, and they kept the referendum off the ballot. Now it gets better, so or worse. And this, I mean, in this case, we even have the newspapers in the state, which are very right wing, very corporate, supporting our referendum, and they were horrified that this $1 billion bailout was unchallenged. 2 days ago, the utility that owns First Energy, the utility that owns the two nuclear plants, I can barely say this, announced a $300 million stock buyback. What? They took the money from the bailout and they used it to buy back their own stock. And, you know, I mean, they don't even care. This is fascism, pure and simple. So we need to have a national call, Gene and Joel and Mark, and we'll hook it up with BuzzFlash, and we'll do it on, because we are in a position now, as you know, Gene. I mean, you're talking about distributed energy, and that's the horror of this Michael Moore film. Is that we're in the greatest technological revolution in history in terms of energy. wind and solar have completely blown by coal, yeah. oil, what I call King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. It's over. And yeah. what's happening to this country, and people don't understand this, is that we are now a third-rate power because Germany and China
yep.
are totally going to... China is lagging on nuclear. I don't know what's going on there. But Germany, as of 2022, be completely nuke-free. They will be 100% green by the end of the decade. They're going to blow everybody away. They will have zero energy costs, for God's yeah. sakes. Nobody's going to be able to compete with Germany. You know, it's insane. Well, anyway, before we're going to run out of time, Gene, I wanted to ask you your work against the wall. We didn't get to that. Can you tell us real quick what you're doing?
Yeah. The center has been one of the engines of suing the Trump administration for construction of the wall. I am the lead attorney on a Supreme Court case challenging the wall right now. So the Supreme Court is basically by June 25th, they're going to consider whether to take the case or not. And we're, interestingly enough, the center is arguing a lot of kind of deep constitutional questions. So I don't need to go into that because that might bore people, but it is like a deeply concerning constitutional crisis right now with how the wall is being built. It endangers all communities who have no say anymore in wall construction, as well as the species there who are also going extinct literally because of the wall. So happy to talk more about it, but it is such incredible tragedy. It's just been an incredible experience, you know, talking just from a heart to heart experience about organizing with immigrant rights groups and human rights groups on the ground. We go out there a lot for just for a ton of site visits. And the last time I was there, I always start crying when we saw a family from Guatemala get detained right on the spot with two little girls who were 4 and 5 years old, who had not slept, ate, drank for days. And, it's the borderlands are just so heartbreaking. Kids are still detained. I can't believe this country. Yes. I can't believe it. And ecologically, it is one of the most like incredibly important parts of this continent. So we're
going to run out of time, Gene. How do people get a hold of you, Gene Su, and your organization and your contacts?
Yeah, so we are at the Center for Biological Diversity, especially on borderlands issues. We have a borderlands page where we have incredible drone footage of the scar of the wall that's being built right now. Just FYI, the construction of the wall did not stop during this pandemic. It was considered an essential service. The people who are, on the lines are communities of color and migrant workers who are building this and putting their life out there on the line. And they have also exposed the virus to so many of the communities on the borderlands. So it's just absolutely ridiculous. Please visit our site. Please visit our borderlands work. It is so important that we organize and sue the hell out of this administration to stop construction.
Gene, what is your contact again? Your website?
www.biologicaldiversity.org.
Okay, very good. It's quite astounding. I mean, this is it for this country. You know, this is the payback for 230 years of empire. This is all about empire. And, this is the classic demise of an empire. You look at Rome, you look at Greece. You look at Babylon, all the countries in Great Britain, all the countries that have gone off and conquered other countries, it comes back. And Donald Trump is payback for all the horrible dictators that we've put in power over the past 200 years. Joel, you want to chime in real quick?
When Gene was talking about the wall.
Before you do, I want to make sure Mark Carlin, you're still on, you're at buzzflash.com. people can write you at buzzflash.com, right?
Buzzflash@buzzflash.com is the email address. Buzzflash.com is the site.
Okay, very good. Okay, Joel Siegel, tell us, talk about your conference tomorrow and also the election protection Zoom call on Monday, if you would.
Sure. From 1 o'clock to 2:15 Eastern Standard Time, we're going to have a national Zoom town hall meeting with Senator Jeff Merkley, Rashida Tlaib, Representative Rashida Tlaib of Detroit, who took my old boss's spot, and she's doing a great job, and Jean Hsu, Food and Water Watch, former Mayor Jennifer Roberts, and Domingo Garcia, the president of LULAC, on what are we going to do as a grassroots people's movement to get a COVID-19 emergency New Deal.
And how do people plug into that?
What they can do is, they can literally Google the COVID-19 emergency response group. That'll take you right to the web page.
Okay. And, so folks, tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern time, and go to what you said, Joel, and join in this call. And then Monday, same deal at 5 o'clock Eastern time. And then we're talking about voter rights. Now, how do people plug into that?
You want to go ahead and give the give that information, Harvey, since you're the leader of that.
Actually, people write me directly. Solartopia@gmail.com. Solartopia@gmail.com. Write me directly, and I'll plug you into both calls. And we want you on board. This is a big deal. And then Gene Sue will do a national Zoom call town meeting on this renewable energy stuff, because it is the future of the world.
Take about
a response to Michael Moore's movie, actually, is what we should do, among other things, and that might draw people. Okay, so Joel, I interrupted you at least three times.
No, you're the host, man. That's all right. Well, what I was going to say is, I never thought in my lifetime that I would see children and families separated from each other at the border in the name of basically white purity, right? Let's be honest, white nationalism, keep America white again. These children have died in custody, and you can't social distance in these detainment centers. They need to be immediately disassembled and outlawed. That's why voting in 2020, November, is going to be so important. Voting by mail, pushing back against voter suppression. We got to get rid of the emperor, Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we're almost out of time, and thank you so much, guys in New York, for the studio time. This was my favorite one. I love being able to see my guests. We got to figure out how to make this accessible to everyone.